Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know, Scott Osborne, if there's music or not tonight, but this is Ron Lee Connell. There's my music. How are you doing, Scott? You're up there. You're in some sort of ravine, but we can kick. Is this correct? Ladies and gentlemen, this is Conover New. Your host, Rodney Lee Conover, is here. And your co-host, Scott Osborne, is, I don't know, stuck in a canyon or something. I'm not sure what is going on. This guy, I can hear him laughing, though. That's always a good sign. Scotty, are you out of that big mud pit that you were in?
I'm still in this mud pit.
Still in the mud pit, okay. But you are, at least you're alive.
Cell phone tonight, and it doesn't do as good. We kind of live in along a creek bed, and so we're kind of in this low area, and I live on about 1 to 2 bars to start off with. So if you can't hear what I'm saying, let me know. We'll make sure we try.
Well, we have something in common because I stopped off at 2 or 3 bars tonight, so we've got that going for it. And, of course, this is a more subdued show because why? Because this is our first show in the evening in I don't know how long. It's been at least 2 years since we did an evening show. We switched to the morning show, and it just became a pain in the ass for everybody, let's be honest. That's the only reason for the programming change is because we all figured out that none of us liked it. And we finally, that might have been going on for years. I don't know that nobody liked the morning show, but everybody seems to like the evening show, and I like it, and you're stuck in the mud, but you still like it, and I'm just going to guess that our favorite Doctor of the Stars, Dr. Mark Brownstein, is on the phone with us this evening. A big change for Dr. Mark having to talk after treating the world's ills instead of talking before treating the world's ills. We'll see how that affects him. Dr. Mark, are you there? I guess not. Scotty, I guess you'll let me know when Dr. Mark calls back in, but we anxiously await him. Maybe he had a sort of emergency post-operative something. You know, that always comes first before the radio show, and we at Conover, you here, understand that. Well, I would be remiss.
He's on the board, and he's on, so he should be there.
Dr. Mark, are you there? I don't hear him, so maybe he didn't push his mute button or something. Anyway, Dr. Mark, if you're there, just start talking whenever. I don't care if you butt into me, because we want to make sure you're with us. We have an extended Dr. Mark visit tonight. Usually we only get him for 20 or 25 minutes, but tonight, who knows? He may talk forever. I think I hear somebody coming on there. Dr. Mark, is that you? No, it's not. I'm stuck with Scotty, who's stuck in the mud, but that's okay. I would be remiss, Scotty, if we didn't start off this very broadcast tonight with something of utmost importance, and that there is 1 or 2 polls, reputable polls, that is showing a surge that is really unusual in politics, because usually 3 weeks, correct me if I'm wrong, Scotty, 3 weeks before an election, people's minds are pretty well made up, and in order to move, the most you can move that line is 2 or 3 points.
Right.
Of course, that wasn't true when Reagan versus Carter, but that was a million years ago. These days, the polls, of course, are way more sophisticated. Some people say they're rigged. Some people, like me, say they're just as rigged as the media itself. And 9 out of 10 polls you do are involve the media, so I don't know how you could trust them in the first place, but what do you make of this, Scotty? What do you make of a couple of these polls showing some unusual activity?
Well, you know, it could be 1 of 2 things. And I'll tell you, there's been a lot thrown at Hillary Clinton this week and last week. Between Project Veritas and WikiLeaks, you know, the Republican candidate should be about 15 points ahead right now. She's such a weak candidate. But that's the problem. Is this stuff from WikiLeaks and Project Veritas is really hard to get out to swing voters. Now we see it because we're on social media and it gets spread all over social media. But it's not on ABC. It's not on CBS. It's not on NBC. It's not on. It's a little bit on Fox. It's definitely not on CNN. So it generally takes some time for this kind of stuff to come out to really start showing any kind of impact. But it's been some pretty powerful stuff. One of the things that makes James O'Keefe with Project Veritas brilliant is he has created a series of videos that are requiring people to be fired. And when a campaign person is fired, then the mainstream media has to cover it. So they have
right.
been covering Project Veritas. So that's been getting out. And I'll tell you, I think it's going to waffle back and forth over the next 2 weeks. Both of these candidates are detested by a lot. And there's Republicans saying they're going to vote for the Democrat. There's Democrats saying they're going to vote for the Republican. It's highly different than anything we've ever seen before. And so I'm more trusting of the polls, Rodney. You know that. But because I don't look at any single poll. I look at all the polls put together, and I look at the average. And generally, the averages are pretty close to reality. They take the outliers and kind of throw those away when you start averaging things. And right now, it looks to me like Donald Trump is sitting at about 5 points below Hillary Clinton. Now, he has no voter turnout organization, although Josh Bernstein let us know tonight they are starting this week working on a voter turnout organization. And James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, they showed us what Hillary Clinton's voter turnout machine looks like. And not only is it incredibly huge, it cheats. Cheats using a number of organizations. You know what I think what's going to do is we're going to get down to that last day, and once they announce who won, we're going to know.
Yeah, I think I personally think you can safely say that whatever Trump's showing up at, give him two extra points. I'm giving him a 2 point extra point. Just for one reason. I see the rallies. I've been looking at these rallies for I don't know how long. 16 people show up for Hillary and 35,000 people show up for Trump. And now I know there's a lot that goes into that, but if it just is consistent time after time after time, you got to at least give Trump a couple of percentage points for the silent majority. But anyway, look up on the board there, see if Dr. Mark hasn't come back, because I feel his presence.
Yes, he should be unmuted. I unmuted him about 30 seconds ago.
Are you there, my doctor friend?
Yeah, I thought maybe you were feeling a rash or something. I didn't know what you were feeling there when you felt my presence.
I'm feeling many things. One of them is a rash, and one of them is the presence of Doctor to the Stars, Dr. Bernstein. How do you feel after treating the world's ills, jumping right on the radio and being with us on the radio, as opposed to the morning show? Is it better?
Well, I'll let you know. I don't know yet because it just happened. I think it's a change in pace. You know, it probably feels like someone is playing sports and suddenly they stop and they're being interviewed about the sport. It's two different things. You know, it's you got to change up your whole mental attitude.
The difference between the post-game and the pre-game interview is what you're telling us.
Yeah, this is a post-game interview.
Yeah, we're full
I can
of
tell
champagne.
You that I had a...
We're drinking champagne and wearing the goggles and throwing, you know, jumping up and down on each other now because the game's over and it's time for the post-game interview. Hey, I would be remiss if I didn't say, how about those Cubs? Yeah, talk about it. A story. Now,
there you go.
I'll tell you, Doctor, if you lived in Chicago, I'll tell you what you'd be treating people for is overjoy. I don't know if that's something that you've ever... Actually, you had me for 10 years, so you've probably treated me for overjoy at a time or two, but it's very exciting.
Yeah, almost
set
standard. That's right.
Yeah, and then
so
one time
thinking,
I came in... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and then one time I came in with a smashed finger. That was not overjoy. That was
oh, yeah.
that was completely under joy, yeah. I got to get you to nip that finger off one of these days. It's giving me problems. Anyway, what were you saying?
Oh, well, there was one piece of medical news I wanted to talk about.
Sure.
It seems like we don't really bring up a lot of medical topics, but there was the, you know, in the I'm sure you guys heard there was a couple hundred cases of what appeared to be a polio-type illness with paralysis in children that was occurring 3 weeks. I think it was mostly in California, but I'm not sure. It was in the United States, and it's an outbreak, an endemic. It seems like it's probably a virus related to the polio virus that we eradicated, supposedly from the face of the earth.
Do you think it's because people are not giving their kids the vaccines like they used to? They got this whole group of people that don't want to vaccinate kids against polio. You think it has something to do with that?
No, this one's not affected by the current vaccines. But what we do know is that, and I'm not a world expert on this topic, but there's a type of polio, which is a virus that's transmitted through the respiratory route and the digestive route. You get it from swimming in contaminated water, hypothetically, or from someone, probably if they coughed and they were sneezed close enough to you, you could get it. Most polio viruses just cause upper respiratory type illnesses and go away without causing paralysis. I think only 5% end up in a paralytic situation. So the one that's a paralytic situation involves 200 kids. And I know that before this was announced, years ago we were kind of looking at polio that was wild type. It's called wild type or untypeable, meaning it was hard to really identify it and give it a number or a name. It had too many variables and mutated a lot out in South. I think it was mostly in South America, Central America. And I was telling my relatives this weekend when I was getting together for a couple of family events that, you know, it goes to show you how, you know, when you don't screen for diseases at the border, then diseases get transmitted. So now it's suddenly a big surprise. You have this. And I'm not saying it's even the same illness. Let's say I'm wrong and it's two different things. But hypothetically, this could happen with any number of illnesses, with Ebola virus, with, you know, anything that's not native to America could come across the border. And if we don't screen for sick people, it could be transmitted. So it's like our government's forgotten about the concept of quarantine. You know, and that's one reason to have, you know, That's one reason to have the border closed. Is, and I don't hear that argument very often in political arguments, that we need to quarantine people that are sick before we let them in the country. Ellis Island, when it was being used for that purpose, was the biggest hospital, I mentioned that before, in the country. The most hospital beds in the country in New York on Ellis Island, where all the European immigrants came through, or most of them, the East Coast, and hundreds of years ago, and, well, 150 years ago, and they were kept there if they were sick. They weren't let into the country to protect the citizens. What happened to our rights of being protected against sick people coming here and transmitting an illness?
Hey, forget about
it. I'd like to know.
The protection of the individual American citizen and taxpayer is gone. I mean, they don't vet people for terrorism. They don't vet people for diseases. They don't. It is just open borders. It's get as many people as you can into this country so a body can show up somewhere and vote. You know, there's still many states that do not have voter ID laws where you can literally, all you got to do as a grassroots effort, all you have to do is look at the tax rolls and pick voters, and there's lots of them, pick voters that have not voted in like 10 years. In other words, people who very rarely vote. They hardly ever vote, and there's hundreds of thousands of millions of these people. Now, not likely voters, not them, but unlikely voters. All you have to do is have a body, anybody, and say they're one of those unlikely voters, and they can vote. And they don't have to worry that this unlikely voter is going to show up and go, hey, wait a minute, I'm Ricardo Johnson, not that other guy. So that's the goal, just to get as many bodies into this country. And you'll wonder, why are they flying these people around to different states? Well, they're doing it because they're battleground states, and they're states without voter ID laws. So it's just, they're just bodies. This is just a cruel and demented and traitorous, may I say, effort to swing an election. And that's exactly what's happening, Doctor. They don't care if 100,000 people get TB. They don't give a damn about that at all. They could care less. All they care about is power, votes, and money. That's it. Follow.
Yeah, you know, but I'm trying to think, when did that happen, when our government's public health department stopped protecting public health? You know, I don't remember exactly when that is, but I haven't heard a single person mention that during any debate. I don't know, Scotty, have you heard anything about that as an argument for not letting in people indiscriminately across the border, spread of illness? Is that a big issue, or do you think that people aren't even worried about that anymore?
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that comes to my mind because I've traveled abroad. I've been in the plane when they sprayed up and down the plane because they were worried we were going to take something from Grenada and bring it here. And it really is, I think, a pretty good size issue. You know, we even have that issue just traveling within the United States. You can have something that's, you know, the flu is going on real hard in New York City and somebody brings it to Los Angeles. But, yeah, it's a big concern to me because when you go to a foreign country, things are different. You know, people that live in Mexico can drink the water because they're used to it. If we go down there and drink the water, that same exact water, we get the runs. And same thing I would imagine, Dr. Brownstein, you would be the expert on this, that there would be certain diseases that we have here in the United States that we're really basically a lot immune to, that somebody else would come from somewhere that's not and more easily get it, and the same bringing it in from someplace else. We don't have that. We're not as used to it and immune to being around. Does that water and immune and disease parallel work, Dr. Brownstein?
Well, yeah, you know, but also I was thinking how these germs, what's the difference between a fatal germ and a terrorist? You know, why not use a terrorist in the broadest sense? A terrorist could be a germ that comes inadvertently on a person that's a carrier across the border. They run across the border easily, and they spread it to our children, our families. They die, and we say, we don't know what that disease was, but there's a fever, there's this, we've never seen it before. Maybe it was something. That happens a lot in medicine. You know, you don't really know what it was. You just know somebody died of a febrile illness, and they were okay the day before. And we see that all the time. And the cultures are all negative. The tests aren't positive for anything specific. Everyone's guessing what it was, but you don't really ever know. Well, why isn't that considered terrorism? Germs in that can be fatal. Why only people? You know, how do you? Maybe the definition of terrorism is should be broadened a little bit to include germs. You know, not bio warfare, but just inadvertent people coming across illnesses that are not known to our civilization that could potentially be dangerous for the whole population because we didn't screen them at the border.
You know, I'm going to switch the subject from everybody getting a disease and dying to something a little less uplifting, and that is this election coming up. Scotty and I were talking a little bit, Doc. We were talking about the polls, but I want to switch it around a little bit because years ago, I said on this very program, I said, you watch. You think that the media is in carrying water? You think they're in the tank for Obama? Forget about it. Wait till Hillary runs. Wait till Hillary Clinton runs. You ain't seen nothing yet where it concerns our media. And lo and behold, I mean, it's not like Nostradamus or anything. But you take a look at what's going on. You have videotape showing Democrat operatives, in their own words, mind you. This is not somebody printing something that could be misinterpreted or something taken out of context or something, some sort of conspiracy. These are videotapes of Democrat operatives in their own words saying how they are cheating, saying how they are buying votes, they are paying people to go disrupt presidential rallies, and they are flat out committing voter fraud with intent to commit voter fraud. And these are not just, you know, low-level people. There's the head of the Democrat whatever in New York who was just fired. It turns out he was a felon, and he visited the White House a couple hundred times. But it's in their own words, Doc. Their own words on videotape saying, yes, we are intentionally rigging the election, and here's how we're doing it, and telling step by step. Now, the media needs to be covering. I mean, this is a campaign. This is a major this is a major presidential party. This is a major American party, in this case the Democrats, admitting they are intentionally cheating and throwing the election and committing vast swaths of election fraud. And the media is not covering it. They're not covering it. CNN isn't covering it. NBC, ABC, CNBC, they're not covering it. And on top of that, the WikiLeaks thing, CNN has gone so far as to tell their own employees that you can't read the WikiLeaks. You can't investigate it and go through those emails and find something. It's illegal to even look at them. Now, can you imagine that we live in a country where this is like William Randolph Hearst? You have a media that is not just in the tank, but you have them not covering blatant election fraud. Now, I ask you, Dr. Brownstein, do you think that this is, I mean, if Hillary does not prevail, who is going to trust the major media anymore? I mean, even supporters of Hillary can't possibly trust what comes out of there anymore. Am I right?
Well, I think that's the whole point, is that how do you know who's telling the truth anymore? And I'm pretty much speechless when it comes to that, reacting to what you just asked. I've never been so disgusted in my life with the way the media is warping stories about everything, mostly on the Democrats' behalf. You turn every channel on, and practically, except maybe Fox News occasionally, and it's just a complete onslaught against every movement that Trump makes, as if he's the Antichrist. The guy's running for president of the United States, for God's sakes. He's one of the bravest people there are to be able to even tolerate, and one of the most admirable people to run for that office. And to have the desire to be that person. And he deserves to be just treated with respect, not this filthy disrespect that the Democrats have for him. And everywhere I go, I hear it from educated people, from uneducated people, but they're always Democrats and they're always left-wing. And I hear it from my own family, and I can't believe it. I feel like I'm in that movie The invasion of the
body snatchers.
Yeah. Where you're like the last person, like the doctor in the movie, running around, and the people are not who they really say they were. They come out of these seed pods, and they're clones, and they're zombie type people, and nobody real is left. I feel like that out to people, the distortion of the news to the point that you don't even know what the hell is going on anymore. And the Democratic side, they go, well, I don't know what you mean. Donald Trump's a fool. And I hear that. It makes me sick. It makes me just want to throw up. It's such a lonely feeling, an isolating, lonely feeling every time I hear that. And that I'm the crazy one for wanting to vote for him. I'm the one that's going to hurt the world. Because of me voting for Trump. Yet any other time, people come to me for advice. You know, that's my position in life. I'm an advisor. People go to their doctor. Doctor means teacher. They want to learn something. They want to learn how to get better. They want to learn what's really wrong. They look at me as a wise man, except when it comes to politics. Then I'm the stupidest person that ever roamed the planet. In my circles, in California, in Los Angeles, and particularly even in the Jewish community where I grew up, that they're all Democrat. Most of them are Democrat, and most of them are voting for Clinton. And they're voting for Clinton not with hesitation, but almost just overjoyed to vote for her. Like, it's not with it's with their whole heart.
I can't really be battled with people anymore when I see excerpts from WikiLeaks and I see the videos that James O'Keefe has let out, and these are not the worst ones. These are supposedly the mild ones. And when I see that, I feel like saying, okay, game over, right? Game over, right? This is it. Game over. We've got them red-handed in their own words, in their own emails. We've got them red-handed, guilty, game over. But no, it's not game over. We're going to ignore it. We're not going to pay any attention to it. We're going to pretend this stuff just doesn't even exist. And you have major news organizations that are supposed to be trusted news organizations, not just one or two. I'm talking about most of them not covering it, saying, you know, this is not worthy of covering. Of course, if they had a Trump campaign person laying out how they've committed election fraud, of course that would be top of the news. It would be 24/7 on the cycle. It'd be like the space shuttle blew up. But it's Hillary. It is strict ideology. I mean, you cannot. Anyone who says the news media is not biased is just, you're one of two things. You're a complete idiot, just a complete foolish dork. Or you're just a liar. Your ideology is just more important than your own freedom, really. Because if one side can do it, believe me, the other side will do it eventually, and it's over. It's just, like you said, it's just sad. It makes me feel like, well, you know, how do you fight that? It's not fair. It's not fair that.
Well, okay, in my family this weekend, some of the people I love the most in my world, that are smart, educated, successful, own businesses, created jobs, highly successful. Not everyone, but almost all of them. Love Clinton, and so these are people that I come to for advice sometimes too. Love Clinton. They think she's wonderful. They think they don't understand. They look at me with a puzzled look. Why I don't, and why I would even ever endorse a hideous, foul. This is the way it comes across. Not just a bad candidate, a hideous, foul, awful human being, the worst that ever roamed the planet, Donald Trump. That's what I hear from my family. And my wife and I are both voting for Trump. And for a good reason. And I give them the good reasons. And I say it's for two or three or four good reasons. I even go so far as to acknowledge, hey, I admit the guy is a narcissist. I admit a bit of a womanizer. I admit that he's, whatever you think he is on the personality side, you're probably accurate. However, he also has some amazingly good ideas that are going to help the country become a safer place and restore some and repair some of the damage that Obama did, and make this a safer place, a better place to live instead of a worse place to live. And it's about time. And I have those three or four things I mentioned that I think are the most important that the president's supposed to do. I don't care what the president's opinion about abortion is. It's not why we're electing the president, because of their opinion on abortion. I don't care what their opinion is on gay rights. That's not what they're being elected for, really, at this point, at this time. I don't care about minor. They're there to protect our country so we don't get blown up by terrorists. That's number one. Number two, they're here to clean up these horrifying neighborhoods in Baltimore, Chicago, Los Angeles, infested with the most dangerous gangs in the world, and getting worse by the minute. And number three, they're here to protect us from this onslaught of the third world coming to our country uninvited and illegally. So that's what they're here for. Anything beyond that, and they're here to protect our our economy from collapsing. So that's
it's
beyond
just,
that.
Yeah.
Anything else they do besides that is icing on the cake. I mean, that those are like the four main things.
Yeah. I find it hard to believe that people do not see that the vote for Hillary is really a vote for. So, I mean, she's at her core, she's a socialist. At her core. And anyone who can't see what socialism does to a country just can't, just, I guess, is just, I don't know. Maybe they're so disappointed in their own lives that they would just like everybody to be miserable. I don't know. Maybe they're disaffected. What do you think, Preacher Scotty? I haven't asked you this in a long time, Scotty, so get on board here. Did Dr. Bronstein quote scripture just now?
Well, yeah, kind of. I'll tell you. And here's my problem with Donald Trump. And I do not want Hillary Clinton to win. I want Donald Trump to win. Since the beginning of the nomination, I said, but what you're fit is what it's a no-win situation. We spent 20 years excoriating Bill Clinton for his dalliances with Monica Lewinsky, and then we nominated our own one. So the moment we nominated him, we gave ourselves this huge set of problems to get self-elected. So I blame the people that nominated him. I don't blame the people that are supporting the nominee and past this. I can't defend it. In fact, I've been telling my friends, support him, vote for him, but don't try and defend some of this stuff that he's been doing and say, oh, it's not that bad, because then we're going to turn around in another 4 years, you're going to have another candidate who's on the other side who you want to throw that stuff at, and well, you can now, well, you defended Donald Trump. I'll tell you, Rodney, you know how I feel on this. It is a non-win situation that we put ourselves into, and it's what happened when the party of principle lays down their principles. And so I don't think Dr. Brownstein's necessarily quoting scripture, but he is frustrated because of a basic principle that is in scripture. If you lay down principles, then you have nothing to fight with. You have no way of standing and making a ruler, making a standard, making a plumb bob. You have no way of arguing and fighting and debating with a standard line in front of you if you've laid those all the way down. And I said over and over again, I do not think the conservatives can lay down their principles and expect to win with anybody. And Donald Trump's got some great positives. There are a few things about Donald Trump I'd love to see in the White House. But he came along with all of these negatives that makes it very, very difficult. Now, you know, Rodney, you mentioned earlier that, you know, the rallies, and that the only hope we've got right now is that these Trump supporters are right. And there is going to be this mega, mega turnout of Trump people that is going to overcome the lack of a voter turnout organization. And that's all possible. Now, I do know here in Dallas, he started out at the American Airlines Center, where they hold about 22,000 people. And then he moved on to Gillies, which holds about 2,000 people or 3,000 people. So, you know, you make your venue packable when you do it. But Hillary does seem to have smaller audiences. I don't know. It's a toss-up right now. We'll see what happens.
Well,
yeah.
There's only one chink in that armor, Scotty, and I think most people agree with what you're saying. But there's only one chink in that armor, and that is
we don't have a choice anymore. That time for choosing came and went, and we all supported Ted Cruz, but he didn't prevail. So the question becomes now, do you value your country's future more than you care about Trump's past? Hey, somebody write that down. I like that. That's a good one.
Well, you know, Dennis, you know what Dennis Prager said? He said, I think I mentioned it before. He said, look, Trump could, this was a few weeks ago, he said, Trump should just present himself to the public and say, look, I'm an imperfect person. I never ran for president because I'm a perfect person. I'm not. And that's just the way I am. I'm like you. I'm imperfect. I have flaws. I have things I've done in my life that I regret, that I would have done differently had I had the wisdom and experience I have now. I have things I did 5 days ago I regret having the wisdom I have now. But basically, I'm running for president not because this was my lifetime dream. It's because I saw the country needs help, and I realize I have the skills to help them, and how could I hold that back? And I'm here to help you. I'm not here, this is not my lifelong ambition to be the president of the United States. I am here because I need to be here. I have a certain set of skills that other people don't have that are going to come in useful for very specific situations that only the president can take care of right now, and that would be me. I'll be that person, and then I'll leave. I'm not going to be a career politician. I'm in and out. I'm here to, I'm like Superman. I'm here to fix the job, and then I leave and go on to the next thing. That's it. And I think if he does that, I don't see what's so terrible about that. That's sort of in the spirit of what the president was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be a career politician, that a political hack. You know, it was meant to be someone that represented the people, that would come to Washington for a while and help the country become a better, stronger place. Because everybody's unique. Everybody has different strengths and weaknesses, and they contribute those. And then they move on, and the next one takes over and imparts their words of wisdom and their experiences and so forth. What we don't, the problem really, I think the basic problem is we have a bunch of hack politicians that are in this war, and by definition, humans are so far from perfect, there's nobody left to run for president. There is nobody perfect enough.
One of the things you said, Scotty, about, you know, when you're the party of principle, you can't lay down your principles. True. But you know what my problem is? The Republican Party hasn't been the party of principles for a long, long time. And they don't, as far as I'm concerned, the Republican Party has nothing to say when it comes to Donald Trump. Nothing. Shut up and support him. Because they have no, they've got far less principles than Donald Trump. Far less. When you take a look at what the Republican Party has done since Obama's become president, the Republican Party was put in power 2010, as you all remember. They have not used the power of the purse ever. They have never done a thing to stop Obama's executive power. They've never done a thing to get rid of Obamacare. In fact, they've done everything they can to keep Obamacare. So I don't buy it. Scotty, I want you to react to this. I don't buy this party of principle thing. Sorry. They're not the party of principle. In fact, they're just the opposite.
Well, and you know, Ronnie, you and I have had this conversation before. You see the party as Paul Ryan and John McCain.
And John Boehner before him.
I see the party as Scott Osborne, Rodney Lee Conover, and Dr. Brownstein. We're the party. Yes, the establishment is totally messed it up. And the establishment, no, they've thrown away their principles. The establishment throwing away their principles is not the problem this time. It's the voters. It's the people. Oh. It's the members of the party that are not the elite portion of the party. They're the ones that are the grassroots. Those are the ones that have thrown away their principles. We know
well, these
that
are the same people that didn't vote
that
for Romney. Well, why didn't they come out for Romney? Was Romney so flawed that, you know, we're throwing away our principles because he's a Mormon or because he's rich? What was the deal there?
The anti-nominee movement for Romney next to the anti-nominee movement for Trump is apples and oranges.
Which is not,
one
which,
was,
yeah, which one is not was a principled stand. That's not a principled stand. And that's my problem. You say, well, it's this and it's that. Okay, but it's not principled. No Republicans are making a principled stand for their nominee, and it pisses me off. And I wanted to start a third party 2 years ago, And, you know, maybe this is a third party. Maybe Donald Trump is a third party and just nobody knows it. I'm not sure, but I'll tell you, I am not going to engage in any sort of personal. It's hard for me to get fired up about Trump. That's the problem. I think a lot of people are uninspired. But I'll tell you, the idea that Hillary gets elected is just beyond me. I don't even think about Donald Trump, Scotty. I don't even think about it. I don't think about his past. I don't think about what he believes in or doesn't believe in. I don't care. I just don't want Hillary president.
The underlying question that has to lie on all of it, though.
It's principled to be against Hillary. It's principled.
We said for years the reason why we didn't win with these middle-of-the-road rhinos is there was not enough of a difference between the principles of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. So you run somebody in the middle, and that's why we lost. We need to just get somebody where you could really see the difference.
Yes, true. But it didn't
all of it, if he can't
it
win,
happen.
It's all irrelevant. If he can't pull the swing voters, it's all irrelevant.
You know,
if he drives off a bunch of women voters, it's all irrelevant. If he can't pull this section of voters, if he can't
win. I know,
win,
but to not try is not a principled stance. Voting for Donald Trump is principled because it's keeping Hillary out of there. And anything that keeps Hillary out of there is a principled stand. That's what I'm saying. All this stuff about Trump is completely irrelevant at this point. Completely. And we can talk about, well, we should have had Ted Cruz. Okay, we should have, but we don't. We didn't have it. Ted Cruz not in there. I wish he was. He'd be kicking Hillary's ass. There's no doubt about it. But he's not in there. And now the question is Trump or Hillary. That's it. And I'm not voting for Trump. I'm voting against Hillary. And that's, to me, that's very principled. Doc, what do you think?
I was going to say something. You know what neither candidate has? Is I was watching old famous, you know, old best speeches from the internet at lunch from Ronald Reagan and John F. Kennedy. And those guys had charisma. Or as my mom calls it, charisma. Charisma. She mispronounces it. Anyway, charisma. They didn't talk about in these great speeches. There was no mention of, well, my opponent sucks and they had sex with their mother-in-law. And there was none of that. It was just about America's the great country and the freedom of the people. You keep hearing these statements that have to do with us, the people, and I'm here for the people, to serve the people, and the people aren't here to serve me. I'm here to serve the people, and the government's not here to be fed by the taxes. They're here to serve the people. And over and over again, the people matter, and these great speeches are interesting. And I was watching them with my 26-year-old medical assistant that does the computer. She'd never seen a speech and didn't really know who John F. Kennedy was. And she said, well, he was before I was born, and Ronald Reagan kind of too. She says, well, I've heard of him. But they'd never seen these other people give a speech, you know, and they were amazing. They stuck to the point. You may disagree with them or agree with them. It didn't matter. They were impressive. Neither candidate gives a speech like that. I think maybe Rudy Giuliani is the closest to that, with him screaming and shouting and showing passion and talking about how great this country is and things. That's a piece of the past that's missing from these candidates. The passion's missing. Where's the passion?
You know what I watched last night? Scotty and Mark, I watched the coolest thing last night on C-SPAN. They had the Kennedy-Nixon debate from 1959. The Nixon-Kennedy debate. It was the first televised debate. And I got to tell you, if you ever get a chance to watch those debates, they will shock you. They will rattle you to your core. Because Richard Nixon, of course, he's been demonized as much as any person ever in the history of politics next to Hitler.
Richard Nixon comes off as smart and as pleasant and as informed. And, you know, he took some, you know, he had his differences with John F. Kennedy, but never personal, never.
No.
Yes. It was always very, very, what's the word? It was always very polite. It was always, my opponent has said in the past, and he is free to correct this if I've mischaracterized, has give these long, you know, before they say anything, they give these long disclaimers. My opponent in the past has been for this, and he's free to correct me. If he's changed since then, that's fine. But at one time, my opponent was for voting against the Sugar Act, you know, or something. And it was just so substantive and so polite. And then they would never interrupt each other, never. And when their 2 minutes was over, they would stop, and the other one would start and say, well, my opponent is right on one thing, and it's this. But, however, I said this, and although I did do this, from da-da-da, I mean, it was really just the most informative. I mean, it just – You watch that and you just yearn. And these guys know what they're talking about.
And guess what? It made you want to vote for them, right?
Yes.
That's the whole thing. That's what these candidates are missing. No one wants to vote for them because they don't have any of those qualities. Neither one of them. They have no charisma at all and no respect. They don't act respectful. They're disrespectful of us. By treating each other with disrespect, they're treating the office of the presidency with disrespect, and it's disrespecting the American people.
Yeah, well, I tell you, Scotty, have you ever seen those debates, those Kennedy-Nixon debates? I mean, it's shocking to me because for decades I've been hearing how terrible John F. Kennedy was and how terrible Nixon was. And you watch them and you're like, wow, I wish they were running the country. You know, at least I could count on something. You know what I mean? Have you ever seen that?
I have watched those debates, and I'll tell you, even if you go back as far as Ronald Reagan and Walter Mondale, although the barbs were a little bit more in there, they were still. And I really do. I think it's a bad sign for our country. This year has been, for many reasons, very, very good. Shake up the political system. I've been thanking Donald Trump for that for a year and a half, and I still am thanking him for that. However, just to the opposite, it has brought us down into the gutter. And see, Rodney, my question isn't always this election, because I'm with you. I'm with you on this. We could make it through a Hillary Clinton presidency. There's a number of arguments you could make that we could make it through a Hillary Clinton presidency. What we can't make it through is if we throw our country into the gutter. What we can make it through is if we continue to decline socially. What I want to know is, what is the next election going to look like? How are those debates going to look?
It's going to be
crazy. Are
they going to
be worse than this?
I'll tell you that.
Because here's some scripture for you. Paul told Timothy things wax worse and worse. And they don't generally get better. So, see, I look at this whole thing as a portion of the decline, and I see us this last year and a half taking a nosedive in decline. And, boy, you bring up a really good point, Rodney. You go back and look at some of those older debates, and there was a politeness. And we lost that. We lost that a long time ago, even in our Republican primary. And it shouldn't be that way.
You know, it reminded me of the Reagan-Mondale debates. You know, they jabbed at each other, but they were always very good-natured. I mean, they just really were good-natured. And to the point where, you know, if Reagan would say something funny, Mondale would sit there and laugh with him. They'd have a good laugh. You know, like, you really got me, but wait, I'll get you back. And, you know, it was like that. And I think it ended. I'm not sure when it ended, but it certainly ended. You don't have – there's no good nature between either one of those. Somebody wrote a really funny line. You know, they don't shake – they don't even shake hands before the debates. And somebody wrote a real funny line that Trump said, that they literally, when they went off to, you know, see their families or whatever they do after the debate, and they kind of ran into each other. They kind of almost, you know, like bumped into each other, and Hillary said, oh, you know, pardon me. And Trump says, only if I get elected. And I thought that was the funniest. I don't know why. I just started laughing at that. And, yeah, they don't even shake hands. They don't even acknowledge each other's families. It's just, it's pathetic. Yeah. It really is pathetic, and I hate it.
Well, neither one acts presidential during these debates. They act like spoiled, like children, like angry little children. Grabbing for something, grabbing for the same prize. You know, the angry, spoiled, rich children. They're both rich. You know, people forget that they think Donald Trump's rich. Hillary Clinton's worth $100 million. She's not poor herself. Two rich, spoiled people that want, you know, it's like, I want, like, I, you know, 2-year-old yelling, mommy, I want this, and grabbing the toys in the aisle and just spoiled to death. They're both acting like that, and it's just sickening. They both disrespect the office of the presidency. It's not about them. It's about the office. They forget that. They both forgot that. They both forgot what they're running for. That's the whole, that's why everyone's sick of both of them.
I really hate it when I see pictures of Obama with his feet up on the desk in the Oval Office. I resent that. I really do. That's a reflection of me. When people around the world see this cat, you know, he might as well have a cigarette in his mouth, and he might as well be, you know, playing a video game. He's got his feet up on the desk. What are you doing? Feet up on the desk. You sit there
Bill
like
Clinton
a man.
Had his, Bill Clinton had his share of...
He had his in... But he did... At least he didn't. At least,
with the cigars.
Yeah, at least he didn't think it was cool, though. Like, here, take a photo of this. How cool am I with my feet? And Obama knows he's getting this photo taken, and he's going, "Yeah, go ahead, snap it off. I'm Mr. Cool sitting here behind. Don't worry about the country. Mr. Cool has it with his feet up on the. This job is so easy. I can kick back, and don't you worry about. He knows he's getting this photo taken. You know, Bill Clinton.
Yep.
He had his fat intern that his daughter's age underneath his desk, but he didn't have photos taken of it. You know, I mean, I'm not
That's
saying
true.
Clinton's any better, but Obama's flawed.
He had his specially treated cigars too.
Yeah, and it is pathetic when you think back about, like, Reagan wouldn't even take his coat off in the Oval Office. You know, have a little bit of respect, country, and now you see these stupid football players with their. I tell you, I hope every one of them gets theirs. I really do. I hope every one of them gets theirs. One part of me really likes it. Probably really, really likes the fact that Colin Kaepernick, you know, has a display of protest during the national anthem. Part of me really likes that because, nothing, you know, he doesn't get thrown in jail. He doesn't get, you know, no one comes up and punches him. Nobody. You know, he doesn't get fined or, you know, nothing bad happens to him from the government. He's free to do that. And so for that reason, I really like these protests because it tells me one thing. It tells me that our military is defending the Constitution as they should be. They're doing a great job. Because if he were to do that in many countries, he would be strung up by the ankles and sliced open with piano wire. You know that? I mean, it would literally be taken out back and shot. And the fact that he can do that in the United States, it kind of warms my heart to think that our military is that good. We are that good at defending the First Amendment and the Constitution as a whole, that he can do that and get away with it. On the other hand, I'm sickened, and I really hope that everyone else uses their freedom of speech and tells them to go to hell and don't buy his products and don't watch these games. I don't watch the NFL. Because of Colin Kaepernick. I don't watch it.
I'll tell you what, it doesn't warm my heart. I don't have the same feeling. I picture when I see that, my dad, the World War II vet, is 94 and a half with dementia and bedridden now, in his last, every year, pulling the flag out. Every holiday, we had to get out in the driveway, put the flag up, and salute it, and sing, you know, say the Pledge of Allegiance, and not giggle and not laugh, and the only ones on the street doing it. And he did it till he couldn't, his legs were trembling underneath him. He couldn't stand anymore last year. They had to help hold him up to sing I couldn't remember the words anymore to the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, but those guys,
half.
But those guys were defending the Constitution and free speech.
He was in
free
D-Day, all these killing Nazis. He was a true patriot.
Yeah.
And I think desecrating the flag, not respecting the flag, is a slap in the face. That's how I interpret it. I know
it is a
too.
Slap in the face. I totally agree. It's a complete slap in the face. But remember, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, free speech is to defend bad speech. Anybody can defend good speech. I mean, that's a piece of cake. It's really the bad speech you're defending. Your right to be an idiot. And Colin Kaepernick has certainly done that. I don't think Colin Kaepernick really knows what he's protesting. I don't. I don't think he understands what he's doing. I really don't.
He's a stupid football player, right? Isn't he a stupid football player? Those guys that
stupid,
college, they don't do any work and they don't know anything. Yeah, the big dummies in your class. That's what he is, right?
He's an ignorant football player who is in the twilight of his career, and he wants some attention. That's the end of it. He doesn't know. He doesn't know the ramifications of what he's doing. Because
I remember the athletes at UCLA were all like almost mentally retarded. They couldn't pass a junior high school class, and they just passed. There were a few that were really smart, but far and few between. Maybe the quarterback, you know. But everyone else was just like an imbecile. And you wonder, what are they doing at UCLA? They barely speak English.
These guys don't have enough knowledge to check into a hotel or fill out an application. They don't. They just know one thing, and it's sad. It's really sad.
Yeah, they can pass the ball.
It's really pathetic that they call it college football, because it's not college football. It's inmate football. It's like that movie with Burt Reynolds, The Longest Yard. It's a bunch of inmates playing. You got the play calling should be like, okay, the quarterback who just got off parole, he steps back, he tosses one out to the wife beater. The wife beater runs down, he's tackled by the guy who just knocked off a liquor store. I mean, that's really, you take a look at the rap sheets on these guys. Hey, somebody write that down. That was pretty funny. But I don't know how we got on the subject of that, but I guess it's all about, this thing where people are not patriotic.
Well,
because it's not.
I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't. These guys are not the smartest guys.
No, they don't know what they're doing. And this thing where it's not cool to be patriotic, it pisses me off. It's really cool to be patriotic. It's very cool. But, not with Obama. He doesn't, I don't got to be patriotic. I'm Mr. Cool. And, this bullshit where he says he's a Christian. He's not a Christian. Just because you stick a branch in your eye, it doesn't make you a tree. He's not a Christian. And you know what? He's not an American. He's anti-American. He's anti-Christian. He's a bigot. And, screw him. I'm tired of him. I just don't have no respect for him anymore. The reason I don't have respect for him is that he doesn't have any respect for me. If it was up to him, Christianity would be against the law. There would be a bounty on white people and what else? And everybody could smoke cools and put their feet up on the desk in the Oval Office if it was up to him. It's driving me nuts. And there's going to be a breaking point. Scotty, come on. Haven't I quoted scripture yet? Cut me some slack.
That last minute. Hey, listen, guys, I have to get going. I have something I got to take care of. But it's been great. And
Scott,
things work out best.
Scotty, say goodbye to the doc. He spent a whole hour. Hey,
it's good to be back together. It's good to hear your voice, and we'll do it again next week.
Thank you. Okay.
See you later,
Doc. Scotty, we had the doc on for an hour, and it still felt like a short time, didn't it?
It did feel like it did go by quick. And it's going to be nice doing this at night. That's going to be one of the reasons. His Dr. Brown's team can take a little bit more time, and I understand he wants to do a couple of whole shows with you, or do at least one a month, and a whole show with you, which would be wonderful. Because I'll tell you, I've always said this about Dr. Brownstein. Dr. Brownstein wasn't raised a conservative. He taught himself to be a conservative, and you kind of come from a different perspective when you've self-taught these basic principles. And, man, he's always got great things to say I think one of these days we need to get him his own show, the Dr. Brownstein show, but he needs to be television.
No, we're working on that TV show. Believe me, I'm working on it. I'm getting closer. If I wasn't so busy, we'd be doing it right now. But I would be remiss, Scotty. You're not going to believe this. But from time to time, we do mention the website, ihavethetruth.com. And it's a place where you can see a lot of Scott Osborne articles. You can see me from time to time. I'm on there. And I Have the Truth, Scotty, has been growing by leaps and bounds. Did you know that we've been in business for less than a year? Did you know that? I don't know.
I'm here. I had a problem with my It's been less than a year, and, man, it's really going. I'll tell you what I always love when
well,
I notice
I gotta
this.
Tell you something, though. I got to tell you something, though, first. We've been in business for less than a year, and the Washington Times named us one of the 6 dangerous conservative websites.
Well, we are. We're
I
dangerous
know.
To the because we tell
Can
the
you?
Truth.
We've been in business less than a year, Scotty, and we're already in the top 6 dangerous websites, baby. That's right. Isn't that exciting?
I find it very exciting. And I'll tell you what I like, Rodney, is when I'm running around, of course, being in social media, that's how I make my money. And so I spend a lot of the day on social media. And I always love it when I'm just in the middle of nowhere somewhere and finding I Have the Truth or a Joe for America article, whether they be mine or somebody else's. And you do that, you see that more and more often. We're really getting out there, Rodney.
It's great, man. I'm just tickled pink. I just can't believe it, you know. Mentioned in the same breath with Drudge, Breitbart, and, you know, Right Wing News, and you know, mentioned in the same breath, my friend. It's a banner day for us over here at Rodney Lee Conover's I Have the Truth. We're stepping up in the world, Scotty, and we're being recognized as dangerous. It reminds me of when I was a stand-up comic. There was a club owner in San Diego that used to call me that. He said, "You're dangerous, man. Get down, Mr. Dangerous." Okay, he never knew what I was going to say because he never knew what I was going to do. I was dangerous. I always liked that. Anyway, I wanted to mention that, give ourselves a little kudos if people want to go over to ihavethetruth.com and get all the dangerous news that's all over there waiting for you. Just jump on
that's
there.
True. And you can find a lot of Colin Kaepernick over there. I'll tell you, Rodney, man, he's hot right now. I better send him a thank you card.
Oh yeah, you bet. Send him a Christmas card with a couple $5 bills in there, buddy. You know what I'm saying?
That's for sure. Well, you know, Rodney, I've been writing for what, almost 3 years now, and I've seen some of my articles really go viral. We had one that we did on California tossing trillions of gallons of water, and it goes crazy. And some climate change articles have gone crazy. But nothing I've written so far has gone as crazy as when I said, "Colin Kaepernick, you're fired." And it's going.
2 days in a row, like 500,000 views. Just think about that. 1 million people read that. I mean, that is unbelievable. 1 million people, more than that. You ever seen 1 million people?
Well, and you know, that's the people that open up and read the article. And there's a lot of people that only see the headline and see the pieces of it. We reach a mega amount of people, and it's unfathomable to really even try and comprehend it.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me want to sit down and write an article but I can't do it anymore. People don't want to hear what I have to say, but back in the day they did. Now I'm just a pencil pusher, Scotty. I just steer the ship.
No, you don't. You are the brains behind the organization, and I'll tell you, Rodney, you're a hard worker. You're a very hard worker, and that's what it takes. That is what it takes. And I'll tell you, you always amaze me because you've always got about 18 irons in the fire.
and keep them all balanced. And how you do it, I don't know. I get more than two, and I get burnt.
Yeah. You gotta keep your plates all spinning. It's not easy. What's the toughest thing is to give up power. You know, I've got to delegate things. I delegated another thing to you today. It always scares me. You know, I think I have competent people I'm working with, but I still get scared. I think, oh, what if they forget? Or, you know, I always feel like I better go check. And it's hard to just let it go and start spinning some other plate. But I've done that over the last couple of years pretty successfully. And I'm here in Florida, where I'm probably going to run for Congress again in a couple of years. So, you know, we got to keep this train rolling down the track until that day comes. It turns out this 18th district here up in St. Petersburg, guess what, Scotty? It's going to be an open seat. I'm not going to be running against somebody.
That would be nice.
Pretty wild. I like that open seat action. Don't want to have to run against a Republican. It hurts my feelings.
I'll be in charge of your Texas office, because you ain't getting me out of the state.
Well, you'll have to move over here, you know, for the months leading up to the election. We'll have to get you over here. You and Nancy Hayes be running things.
That we can do. One thing I know for sure, Rodney, is I know the power of the grassroots. And one of my big items when I look at a candidate to support them, understand how to use and the power of the grassroots, because that, I'll tell you, that's worth raising $1 million real easy. Not only will it help you raise $1 million, but it'll accomplish $1 million worth of work, and you know that. So it'll be fun. It'll definitely be fun.
Well, I think so, and I'm going to win this time, hopefully. And if we don't, we're going to go down swinging. Tell you that. Well, so the other night, Scotty, we were having the same old tired argument that we always have, which is, why aren't you going, you know, full balls for Trump? I know you're going to vote for him, or maybe you did already. And I have to admit, I'm fairly passive when it comes to Trump. But you know, I just hope I hope enough damage can be done with Hillary to make her. I guess what I hope more than anything is that her voters don't turn out, not because they haven't been alerted. They have been doing a good job with the grassroots and the voter turnout, as you said. But I'm hoping that there's just fatigue on the part of Hillary voters, where they just are like, oh, my God, another video, another WikiLeak, another crime. She committed another crime. I mean, every Hillary supporter over the age of 25 understands that she's committed crimes. And she's compromised the FBI. She's compromised the Office of the Secretary of State. She's compromised the Office of the Presidency. Held her. The leader of this PAC went in and visited Obama, and they're on WikiLeaks, clearly working with the PACs, which is against federal election law. You have to be a dope not to know that she's committed high crimes and felonies. And I'm hoping that it's enough. You know, if there's enough dog pile on the rabbit, then her voters would just say, you know what, I'm not voting for Trump. I'm just not voting, you know? What do you think that could happen? What do you think the odds that happens in a big way?
Well, I think the odds are slim, and I'll tell you why. Those people are there. Those people are definitely there. And I think they are, a lot of them, there. But that's why you put together a voter turnout organization. And we saw over the last three videos, and that's what this Project Veritas, that's what all these videos are. They're looking at her voter turnout organization. And what the voter turnout organization, its responsibility is to grab those people on the day of voting and say, we need you to get out and vote. If we'll come pick you up, guess what? We'll pay you $10 if you just go vote. And it's not just her grassroots. She's got an incredible grassroots that's organized, just like Herman Cain did. She adopted that from Barack Obama. And then, of course, you know, you put that together with the Clinton political machine. It's incredible, because Hillary's not super good at grassroots.
But if you notice these organizations that are involved in these Project Veritas videos, those organizations are going to be her voter turnout. They're going to be her grassroots. So everybody that's involved, and there's about 8 or 9 of these different organizations that she's got in her bundle, in her basket, and they're going to go out and they're going to get those people that you're talking about. The problem with Donald Trump is he never set one up. Now, Josh Berenstein tonight got on Facebook Live, and I watched what he had to say, and they're doing it all of a sudden. Now, 3 weeks from the election, the Trump campaign has decided they need to finally listen to Scott Osborne down in Dallas, Texas, and set up a voter turnout organization. But, you see, that should have been done months ago. He should have been working on that before he ever won the primary. You work on that during the primary, and you get kind of a skeleton going on. And if you win the primary, then you take and you add to that and make it grow. That's what we did with Herman Cain. We were self-organized. Herman Cain didn't have to do it. But so you're right, Rodney. And there's a lot of people, though, on the other side of Trump that are the exact same way. Either one they don't want. But that's what voter turnout organizations are for. And they're going to be on the phone, on text, on email, on Facebook. They're going to be taking and picking people up, taking them to the polls. They're going to be encouraging them to get to the polls. And I think it really eliminates that as a situation for the most part. Now, are there going to be more than they can even handle of those kind of people? Now, that's a possibility. And that could be a real possibility on both sides. But that voter turnout organization, you're setting up a campaign. That voter turnout organization is the last piece of the campaign. And the day of the voters, of the vote, you got to have your people out there with signs, directing the voters, handing out pamphlets, calling people up, getting them out to the polls. And it can be worth 5 or 6 points in an election if done right.
Well, so you don't think I have a valid hope here where there's just so much negative stuff come out of Hillary that you don't have a big group of Hillary supporters, people that would normally go out and vote, people that are just fed up with it and just say, you know what, I can't vote for Trump. I hate Trump. He's the worst person in the world, so I'm just not going to vote.
I think you've got a great valid hope. I just know that Hillary Clinton's already thought about it, and she's already planned for it, and she's already schemed for it. And that's the reason Mitt Romney lost last time. You know, Barack Obama was 1 point ahead at Real Clear Politics, and he won by 4. And it was basically voter turnout. Mitt Romney did not learn from Herman Cain, from Ron Paul, from some of the other primary candidates that had organized grassroots, organized voter turnout. Mitt Romney was kind of the same way. He did not see the necessity for using and utilizing the grassroots. And so I think you're valid. It's just that Hillary Clinton knows it too.
Well, her birthday is in what? Is her birthday tomorrow or the next day? Hillary's.
Oh, is it really? Oh, that's all we need.
Yeah,
well,
it's either tomorrow. Well, the reason I even bring it up is because O'Keefe has been hinting forever that she's going to have a birthday surprise. And Drudge has said the same thing, that there's a surprise. And supposedly, God, I mean, I have heard the most outrageous things that's going to happen. Like there's a sex tape, or there's a, you know, they've got her on tape saying nigger, or something just really. I mean, I've heard some stuff that if it were true, they'd have to cover it. They'd have to cover it in the mainstream news. They couldn't not. It'd be like the Monica Lewinsky thing. Eventually, they've got to cover it because everybody else is, and everybody else is making money off of it. And I tell you, if there is half of what I've been hearing is out there ready to come out on her birthday, it's going to be, you talk about being down in the mud. This country will be thrust into a mud-slinging contest that you've never even dreamed about. But if anybody wonders why Trump seems to really be nonchalant about things, it might be because he knows something. I mean, it might very well be. And he's the king of just earned media. We all know that. He depends on that earned media for everything. So I don't know. What have you heard anything down in the Texas trenches where you're stuck?
I haven't heard that one that you just told me about, the birthday surprise, but I do know WikiLeaks put out today that her chief campaign strategist, and I can't pronounce his last name, Joe something or other. They've got a surprise for him coming, and they've got a surprise for Tim Kaine. And I'll tell you, WikiLeaks, you can really trust WikiLeaks, not only on what they're putting out, but what kind of level it is. You know, they give some things, they give a big fanfare to, and some things, they just kind of put out there. But they've never really tweeted out individually, boy, it's coming to you. So I think this campaign strategist is just going to be another one to knock off that he might have to be fired in the last 3 weeks, or maybe they won't fire him.
But what are they going to do with Tim Kaine?
Tim Kaine could be huge. If they've got something huge on Tim Kaine, that would be something else.
He'll have to be replaced, right?
Oh, yeah. If it was something bad enough, they'd have to replace him, and that could really cause some chaos. There's a lot that's for sure.
Except I wouldn't put it past her. If let's say something came out that was so devastating that Tim Kaine resigned, okay? He just said, I can't, and he just resigns. I wouldn't put it past Hillary to replace him with Bernie Sanders. I wouldn't put it past her.
That would be, if I were her campaign if I were her campaign manager, I would have told her to take Bernie as her vice president
VP.
In the first place. Why she took Tim Kaine is beyond me. He provides nothing whatsoever.
Except
for her, he makes her look smarter.
He's a complete zero. I mean, I don't understand it at all. How you would think she'd grab an Hispanic guy or, like you say, Bernie Sanders or somebody. My God, I always thought she'd get that the Castro guy from San Antonio. He must have something in his closet that they were going to nail him on. Because that would seem like a no-brainer to me. That might even swing Texas for
Very well could have. Very well could have. But you know why these guys sometimes do what they do? You and I sit back and we like to analyze this. You and I both have analytical minds. And it's oftentimes I wonder why in the world. I wonder why Mitt Romney didn't pick up Herman Cain or Alan West and really go after the black vote not only would attract votes, but could explain to the black community what Donald Trump is doing a lousy job of explaining.
Do you know why Mitt Romney didn't pick Herman Cain or Alan West?
I'm afraid to ask.
Because Mormons really don't like black people. I think that's really why.
Well, and there's a lot of truth to that. I know some Mormon history. Until they needed black men on Brigham Young University's basketball team.
right.
There were some serious issues with the black community in the Mormon.
Yeah, now, what's the whole thing? It's the Mark of Cain, right? What's that whole thing?
It goes back to the Mark of Cain, and it's most Mormons today really don't believe that.
Yeah.
I they're higher-ups. Many of them, the higher-ups in the Mormon church are a lot like the higher-ups in the Catholic Church. You're comparable to the Chicago mob. In fact, I worked for the Mormons back when I came home from college. I went to work for Extra Storage there in Fresno, and it was owned by the Mormons. And there's a book out there that's very hard to find called The Mormon Murders.
And my boss is in that book. it's quite interesting. They burned down the publishing house, and it was, you want to talk about some crooked. Now, we have to give the Mormons credit because, again, we're talking establishment and the people. The Mormon people as a whole have really got it going on when it comes to their faith.
I love Mormons. I've never met a Mormon I didn't love.
Their hierarchy leaves little to be desired, I hate to say it.
Yeah. Well, listen, buddy. I got some bad news. Well, not really bad news. I just got some news. But as you know, I'm on the East Coast. I'm here in Florida. And I'm fixing to wrap up this show in 10 minutes. What do you think about an hour and a half long show instead of 2 hours?
You know what? That is good for me. If we ever need to, always bump it back up. But an hour and a half is a good length of a show. We can do that.
Let's do that, and when we have a couple of guests, we'll make it a two-hour show. But I mean, I am starting to fade pretty fast. I had a pretty long day, and I still have to go on ihavethetruth.com and correct all your mistakes and republish everything that you've written. So, I'm going to be interested to find out why which articles the Washington Times, read that made them call us a dangerous website, because I think it's probably all of yours. I'm just going to guess.
I'm pretty harsh.
I know.
Yeah. I would be honored.
Well, if people could, one of these days, we got to have an argument on air like we have off air, don't you think?
Oh, well, most definitely. We have a lot of fun.
Yeah, we have.
Although
we're not having
any argument.
Yeah, we can't. That's the problem.
Rumor the first 100 days that you and I are going to Guantanamo.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. But we can argue down there. I wonder if they will let us do Blog Talk Radio at Guantanamo.
Right from the beach?
Do you think that the lady with the British accent, she'll have like a Cuban accent instead of British? your blog talk show starts in 2 minutes. Comrade, go. Anyway, I'm going to let you play a song out, and I'm going to hit the hay, buddy. But remind everybody what's going on in Blog Talk Land this upcoming week.
All right. Well, let me tell you what came on this last week, Rodney. Remember Sissy from Family Affair? Dan and Gary had Karen Garver, I believe her, Kathy Garver, on. They did a great time. You only had her on for a half an hour, but had a great interview with her. And you can go back and find that at Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson in the archives. And boy, Dan and Gary have been rocking it over there. That is for sure. Those two, Gary's been getting guests right and left, and Dan has been just right there leading the show, and very, very proud of both of them. And then, of course, on Tuesday, we've got American Sovereignty Radio. It gets a little crazy sometimes, folks, because, as you probably know, I'm not really happy with his nominee. And Jennifer and Dan, Jennifer's been behind the nominee since the very beginning. Dan kind of jumped on there at the end when he saw that he was going to win. And so it gets kind of crazy sometimes. We try and keep Trump out of the conversation as much as possible, but it's kind of hard talking politics not to slide him in. And then we've got Ladies Bible Class on Fridays. Now, we've been on a hiatus for a couple of weeks and might be on a hiatus another week and pick back up in November. And we'll be looking at that. But we're going through the Old Testament as we have continued to go on. And with that, that's what's going on Continuing for Truth Radio. Join us next week on Monday as we have moved Conover You, the morning show, to Conover You, the late night show. Where it is. You know, I enjoy doing the morning venue. It was kind of fun, and it was refreshing to be starting your day that way. But, boy, that time frame at 9:30 was getting in the way of starting my day in so many ways the last few months.
So we're glad that we've changed it, and we're going to have a great time. Glad Dr. Brownstein could be on with us more by doing this, and we've got to get our Jennifer Cabani back. We've got to talk to her about doing the evening. And so,
well, I'll get in touch with Jennifer, and I'll see if these hours are better for her. I hope they are.
That'll work, because we always like finding out what's going on with the college students, because if you think the country's crazy, you just wait till you see what's going on in our universities, and you'll realize why the country's crazy. So with that, I'm going to put us out, Rodney, with some applause, and I will talk to you later. Get some sleep, my friend, and we give best wishes to your mother. We love her, and pray in heart.
All right, buddy. See you later.